from the Convention Centre where the Dáil is sitting today by Tánaiste Leo Varadkar. Very good afternoon to you, Tánaiste. Thanks for joining us on the programme. You've heard, I think, some of what Mary Lou McDonald had to say there in terms of the government using all its resources to try to resist what is reported to be an attempt by the British government to bring forward legislation now for an amnesty for crimes committed in Northern Ireland before 1998. Yes. First of all, in the hours since these reports have appeared, has the government, have you been able to establish exactly what the British government is intending to do?
We haven't been able to establish that as a matter of fact, but we are very alarmed and deeply disturbed at reports that the British government is even considering acting unilaterally to give immunity to people who committed the worst imaginable offences during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. It would be in violation of the Stormont House Agreement. It would be in violation of the New Decade, New Approach Agreement. It couldn't possibly be even considered without the agreement of the parties in Northern Ireland. And I just want to say that the government stands foursquare behind the victims of violence in Northern Ireland, the families whose lives have been destroyed by the crimes that were committed up there during the Troubles. And I want to say that this doesn't just apply to victims of violence at the hands of British forces. This also applies to people who are victims of violence at the hands of Republicans and also Loyalists. And those people need to be brought to justice, and victims have a right to information, closure and justice. And this will be the wrong approach.
Right. So you say you had no forewarning that this might be under consideration. You haven't been able to establish in the last period of time exactly what the British government might be planning next week. But I suppose, on the other hand, it's hardly a surprise, is it? This was a British Conservative Party election manifesto commitment. They've again and again returned to this issue, and it would seem made their intentions clear.
You know, it's an issue that has cropped up from time to time. We, with reason, believed that they weren't going to proceed with this. You know, bear in mind, one of their veterans ministers resigned recently because the government in Britain wasn't proceeding with this. We still don't know if these reports are true. We may have to wait until the Queen's speech to find out whether or not it's the case. But certainly in discussions with Brandon Lewis, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, who met me yesterday, met with Mr. Coveney, this was not discussed with us. So we're quite taken aback that it has come up in the way it has. And like I say, you know, the suggestion that this would also apply to Republicans who committed murders and terrible crimes in Northern Ireland, I think will very much annoy the Unionist community there in particular.
All right. But there are also considerable difficulties in bringing these cases to prosecution, aren't there? It's illustrated this week by the collapse of the trial of the two former paratroopers. Does this Stormont House agreement, which provides for this, does it need to be revisited in any way, looked at again?
I think in many ways it was, because, you know, legacy issues were part of NDNA, of New Decade, New Approach. And in my mind anyway, when the Northern Ireland parties made that agreement only back in January of last year, what was intended to be done in terms of legacy issues was reaffirmed. There's also the issue of the UN Convention on Human Rights, which has to be taken into account here as well. And part of the agreements we've made in relation to Brexit was that the rights that people have under the ECHR would continue to apply in Northern Ireland. So this is a matter of serious concern. And even though we've gone about, even if they were considering doing this, there should have been conversations with us here as the sovereign government in the Republic of Ireland, but also and particularly with the parties in Northern Ireland, with the DUP, with Sinn Féin, with the SDP, with Alliance, Greens, EUP and others. And that doesn't appear to have taken place. So very alarmed by this, very concerned and very much on the side of the victims and their families.
And if there was a request from the British for discussions on this, to look again at these plans, would the government be open to that?
We're always open to discussing anything with the British government that they want to discuss with us. But like I say, we stand by the principle that people who are victims of violence and the Troubles, their families have a right to know what happened. They have a right to the truth. They have a right to information. And they have a right to see justice done if it can be done. And the difficulty with an indemnity for the IRA, for the British Army, for Loyalists, for anyone, is that that's something that would take away that possibility from victims, even if it is remote that a prosecution should be secured.
It's not the first time there's been a suggestion of unilateral action by the British government on a matter that affects Anglo-Irish relations. How would you characterise relations between Dublin and London at the moment, Tánaiste?
They're okay. they're not as good as they were before Brexit. Obviously, Brexit created difficulties. But always, you know, we make strenuous efforts to repair relations and strengthen relations. And even though there have been issues, we've always managed to come to an agreement. You know, even when people doubted it, we were able to come to an agreement on the protocol. We were able to have a withdrawal agreement. We were able to have a trade and cooperation agreement. And we were able to have NDNA. And that was all under, or most of that was under Prime Minister Johnson. So it's a rocky relationship. It's not as nice as it might have been in the past, but we do get things done. And it is a functioning relationship.
Right. Just a couple of other matters while you're with us, if I might. The new COVID vaccination plan, which has been worked on in terms of the process now of who gets what vaccines when are we likely to see that plan? When is it likely to get government approval?
I haven't seen it myself yet, so I imagine it's going to be next week sometime. Cabinet meeting on Tuesday, as you know. But the approach is one that is very sensible. It is to be as fair as possible in the allocations and to get it done as quickly as possible. So we'll continue to work down the age groups. As you'll know, we're now asking people in their 50s to sign up on the portal and get their appointment. We've started using the Johnson vaccine, the Janssen vaccine on vulnerable groups only today. And while it might be the case that, you know, we're able to vaccinate some of the 40-somethings while we're finishing off the 50-somethings, it's not the case that any generation or any decade is going to be skipped.
And sticking to these age categories, does that mean giving the J&J and AstraZeneca vaccines to those under 50 to avoid having unused supplies of those vaccines later in the summer?
Yeah, that's an option being considered. We don't have a big supply of the Janssen vaccine at the moment, but we will in June. And certainly we don't want to be in the situation whereby we have, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of vaccines in a warehouse or a fridge not being used when they could be used. And I have to say the HSC has done a brilliant job in the vaccine programme. Really want to thank the doctors, the nurses, the volunteers, all of the staff. Once the vaccines gets into the country, 95% of them are in somebody's arm within 7 days. Yeah. We want to keep that up.
You've been talking about a return to some sort of normality this summer in various aspects of the way we live our lives. But maybe just a question about the mandatory hotel quarantine system, because this week, Professor Mark Ferguson, who's the Director General of Science Foundation Ireland, who's looking at antigen tests, rapid antigen tests, he says that these could, for people arriving in the country, potentially dispense with the requirement for this mandatory quarantine. Is he correct in that?
I think there's a role for antigen testing. As the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, I'm going to be really encouraging workplaces and businesses to avail of it. Mr. Harris is going to do the same to help students get back on campus in September, October. Minister Foley, in relation to schools, it could be used for foreign travel, but it would not be correct to say that it would be as effective as a PCR test or as effective as mandatory hotel quarantine. You would miss more cases. So yes, it could be used as a risk reduction, risk mitigation measure, but it wouldn't achieve what hotel quarantine achieves or even PCR testing would achieve in terms of risk reduction.
But you've been talking about a plan for reopening the aviation sector. Would it be part of that kind of plan? And how soon might we begin to see flights in any numbers into and out of this country again?
You know, I think that's hard to predict at this stage. We're going ahead with what we plan to do in May, which is a major reopening of our economy and society, further reopening happening in June. In July, I'd hope to see things like indoor dining being allowed and even small gatherings. International travel, I think, probably comes after that, you know, later in July or August at the earliest. And we'll have to do it in a stepwise fashion. We'll have to do it in a way that is safe. Perhaps making a distinction between people who are vaccinated and those who are not, making a distinction between countries where the incidence is very low as opposed to where it is not. And one thing I think we need to explore is the whole issue of freeing up travel with Britain. You know, bear in mind, we have a common travel area. The UK has never imposed any restrictions on us, actually, even though we did impose them on them. And we will see a strange situation arise as soon as June, where we can go to Northern Ireland as tourists or for family visits. People from Northern Ireland can come here. English and Scottish people can go to Northern Ireland, and people from Northern Ireland will be able to go to England and Scotland, but we won't be able to go to England and Scotland. And I think that's going to be a strange scenario. And perhaps as a first step, restoring the common travel area might be the thing to do.
Just finally, in a moment, Thornisher, we're going to have a report on what is it about the Irish housing market that's attracting so much overseas investment, big investment funds into family homes here? But this suggested ban on these funds buying up entire housing estates or substantial numbers of properties in those estates, but not in relation to other developments like apartments. Is that not an artificial distinction? Many people would like to buy an apartment and would regard that as their family home, but one they'd like to own.
Well, you know, I think what we saw happening in Maynooth and what we saw happening in Hollystown in my own constituency, where an investment fund came in and bought up a substantially completed estate over the heads of first-time buyers, over the head of people upgrading, over the head of approved housing bodies, that's not desirable, and that's something we don't want to see continue. So we're looking at solutions that will put a stop to that. I think there is a role for investment funds to play. It's very hard at the moment for builders and developers to get finance to build apartment blocks, to build high density developments because of the costs and risks involved. And it is the case that some of these apartment developments might not have been built at all were it not for investment from these funds. And that would have mean fewer houses or fewer homes to rent and higher rents and perhaps even higher homelessness. But you know, I do take the point that you're making. Of course, there are lots of people who would like to be able to buy apartments in city centre locations and not have to rent. And we need to find a way, an alternative way to finance these developments if we're not going to rely on investment funds. We don't currently have that. So we don't want to throw the baby out of water here and end up banning a form of housing investments that actually results in fewer houses.
Yeah, but what sort of solutions are you looking at then to stop the kind of thing we saw in Malahide where an entire estate is being bought up? Can that be stopped?
We believe so, but we don't have that solution finalised as yet. It's being worked on at the moment. Minister Bryan and Minister Donoghue, or Ms Donoghue, are working on that together. There's a tax-linked solution. We already changed the tax treatment for investment funds in the budget just gone by, but there may be a tax measure that would make this less attractive for them, or there may be rules that we could introduce under the Planning and Development Act to limit the number of properties anyone
person could buy. This has been going on for years. This investment hasn't suddenly happened this month or last. It's something that we've seen now for several years under this government and under the previous Fine Gael government, and you're only taking action now.
I think there's a different character to what's happening now, which is housing estates that have been largely completed, that first-time buyers, people upgrading, wanted to buy, approved housing bodies wanted to buy to provide social housing. What we'd see more of, I know this isn't the first time this has happened, but what we've tended to see more of in the past is investment funds financing developments that might not have otherwise taken place. This is different. I know it's not the first time it's happened, but I do think it's different in character. And the policies that were right 10 years ago to encourage investment into a market that was dead may not be the right ones now, so we have to be willing to change them.
We were talking about Brexit a moment ago in relation to Anglo-Irish relations. You're also today extending the deadline for this customs business grant, which is designed to help companies have to deal with a lot more bureaucracy as a result of Brexit. What's happening there?
Yeah, that's right. So this is a grant of €9,000, which businesses can claim through Enterprise Ireland. It's essentially to help them to hire a customs staff officer in their business, or to help with the cost of training somebody or retaining somebody to help them with the customs role. So we set aside €20 million. Only €12 million has been drawn down so far, and we're extending it until December 31st. And I really would encourage companies to take this up. Brexit is still unfolding. Britain has yet to impose its customs controls and checks on exports coming from Ireland into Britain, and we need to be prepared. And this financial support of €9,000 in grant form is available to businesses trading with Great Britain, and I'd encourage them to go on to Enterprise Ireland's website or contact EI and take up this offer.
Very good. Tánaiste Leo Varadkar, thanks for talking to us here on the News at 1.